This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking.
It's Wednesday, the 11th of June. I'm Stuart Lohmann. The United States and China have agreed to implement the consensus established during recent talks in Geneva. Our partners at Bloomberg report.
Well, the difference between this meeting and Geneva is Geneva set the framework, but for whatever reason, it just wasn't happening. It was going too slowly, too painfully, and so we put that on the table. But most importantly, you had President Trump and President Xi on the phone together, and they gave sort of the fundamental foundation on which we were able to reach agreement. Without those two leaders, it was very difficult, but with the two leaders talking, I think we both sides, had that strong push to let's get this done. That's why we stayed at it so late in the day, that we never stopped. We started early, we ended late. You have to get things done if you're working for President Trump, and I'm sure they felt they had to get it done because they were working for President Xi.
Are they going to have another phone call anytime soon?
Oh, you'd have to ask them. That's between them.
Did the Chinese seem motivated to come to some sort of agreement?
Oh, we're here. What time are we talking to you? I mean, obviously it's 11 and a half hours, 12 hours since we got together, right, this morning. More.
When was the call with the president? Like Thursday morning, and it's
right.
Monday.
I mean, we got together at 10 this morning. It's almost midnight, so it's 14 hours of being together.
Issued in writing after the talks in London.
Well, we have an agreement. We have the Geneva Agreement. Right now, we've agreed on a framework to implement that. Right, we have an agreement already.
What does that framework look like?
When do we get to see the framework?
We have the Geneva Agreement. That's what we're keying off of, and we're working together very closely with them to make sure that the implementation goes forward speedily.
Geneva was 4 weeks ago. How do you avoid having a situation happen again?
Well, I think the difference this time is you had the two presidents on the phone together, really creating the foundation that is the purpose that this framework is built upon. So it was the combination of Geneva's consensus coupled with the president's phone call led us to feeling actually very confident that we will work this out. Now, President Trump's got to approve it. The Chinese side has to take that back to their president. And then once that's done, we will be back on the phone together and we will then start to implement this agreement.
But do we have any breakthroughs? Any?
Well, I think we have the two largest economies in the world have reached a handshake, right, for a framework. We're going to start to implement that framework upon the approval of President Trump, and the Chinese will get the President Xi's approval, and that's the process. So once the presidents approve it, we will then seek to implement it, and it is by definition, two giant economies have lots of complex issues, but we pounded through all of them, and I think we've reached a framework to implement the agreements that have been reached.
One never knows how those back-at-home talks will play out. On the local front, the BEE debate is back in the national spotlight, and the recording of Saarkelliger CEO Piet le Roux speaking at the Black Business Council in 2022 has resurfaced. Saarkelliger republished the address yesterday. Let's take a look.
Now, given how different our views are, I wish to extend my appreciation to Mr. Matabane and the Black Business Council for this invitation to participate. I guess I was offered to offer my views forthright, and let me honor that invitation. I shall speak to the current state of affairs and along the way try to explain why Saarkelliger has decided that it must oppose the policy of BEE. There is some common ground, of course. One thing on which there is that BEE as a policy is not working. And the president of the Black Business Council and many others extended comments last night. And there are many proponents here today in favor of BEE who think BEE isn't working. One more thing on which there might be common ground, I'm not sure, is the purpose of BEE. I get different versions of this every time I read or listen to some of these events. So let me propose something and stand to be corrected if someone wants. But BEE, the policy of BEE is a means to an end. It's not an end in itself. So if the end towards which BEE is aimed is the flourishing of black communities and black people in South Africa, then this is a legitimate aim, It's a laudable aspiration and worthy of support. And I think around that there can also be common ground. But the uncommon ground is there as well. Where I think our paths diverge is on the evaluation of BEE as an appropriate means. Increasingly, there's a swell of criticism against BEE as a policy, as a means. And this has been building not because people dispute the aim, at least as I have put it, but because of their practical experience of BEE, both personally and at a social level. Some of the criticism is well-founded, others possibly not. I wish to highlight only one. The concern with BEE that I wish to put to you and that takes primacy at Saakeliga is our view that it is fundamentally impossible for the policy of BEE as we know it to achieve the aim of a flourishing black community, and that is a flourishing society. We think, we don't wish it to be that way, it is our assessment. Our assessment is that BEE is not empowering but disempowering. Now importantly, this failure has nothing to do with the black part. It has to do with the economics part. Because, and this is our contention, that BEE is the substitution of economics and politics. It is where we allocate capital politically instead of entrepreneurially. Instead of goods and services being measured against the yardstick of what it means for consumers and the public, you look at the price, you look at the quality, you give the best to the public because that's what matters, we're adding layers of complexity. We add layer of structural cost to doing this, and along the way we crowd out real value generation and we make some sacrifices on price and on quality, so we make some sacrifices for the public, the end to which we aimed. At Saakeliga we prefer this common good approach. And we say that the ultimate end of economics must be for the enrichment not of the owners, not of the workers, not of the managers, but for the society. So our argument that this adds cost is the core of why we object. What is the alternative, one might ask? And last night our program director asked that of me. Ironically, I think the future of real empowerment probably lies in something identified but rejected by the architects of BEE 20 years ago. In the 2001 report by the Black Economic Empowerment Commission, chaired, as we would know, by President Ramaphosa, reflecting on about 300 major deals in the 1990s the report BEE deals, so there has been some BEE deals, the report identified what it sought as a threatening development. It said, the new trend is to fund BEE deals using a private equity model that insists on own contributions, sector focus and operational involvement by the BEE company, and passes some of the risks to the target company. In other words, the BEE Commission, at the founding of the BEE Act, was not concerned that companies were unwilling to do business with black people, but about the conditions attached, the conditions of adding real value and having skin in the game. What does the future hold? Now, I might be wrong. Saakeliga might be wrong. We might be mistaken and misrepresent economics. That would be the point, I think, to challenge us would be the point on which we can change our strategy. But in the meantime, given our analysis that BEE harms the common good, that it does not achieve the laudable ends, we must oppose it. We are committed as an organization to creating a favorable environment for business in the public interest. For those who are proponents of BEE because they want it to serve different ends or disagree with me about its economic problems, I have good news. BEE is not going to disappear overnight. While Saakeliga will do its best, the policy, as we know it, has found a deep foothold over decades and is still currently expanding. BEE is not turning around, it's expanding. And as much as Saakeliga could play a role in hastening the turnaround, in the end, if our argument holds, BEE will collapse under its own economic contradictions because it is not a suitable means to an appropriate end.
One can argue that the BEE challenge has only intensified over the past 3 years. You can find LaRue's full talk on the Saakeliga YouTube channel. As concern over farm attacks and rural safety continues to intensify, DA leader and agricultural minister John Steenhuisen has pledged to increase the protection of South Africa's farmers. Let's take a look.
In my capacity as Minister of Agriculture, I'm announcing that we're going to work with the sector to design a comprehensive plan to combat farm murders, stock theft, and improve rural safety.
I'm not the Minister of Police, but we do have some influence, and I've made very careful notes this evening about the issues. For those who don't know Ian Cameron, I'm sure you all know Ian Cameron. Ian Cameron is the chairman of the Police Portfolio Committee in Parliament. And obviously Lisa Schickeling, who is on the Police Portfolio Committee as well. I've made very detailed notes, and as I said earlier, I think we've got an opportunity now to maybe start pushing for some of the red tape to be cut and some of the opportunities to maybe get some resources that would have been more difficult to get in the past. There's a number of issues, local issues that have been raised. The Port Jackson community, BKB building, the Protea Road, and of course the drone stuff, trying to get some of the red tape cut on drones. And obviously our job is to try and make it as easy as possible for you to do what you need to do, but also to help get the police to do what they need to do. But a community that stands together is a community that's going to be stronger. So every little thing that you do makes a difference, and don't ever think it doesn't. So thank you very, very much for having me, but also thanks for plugging me in, because I'm visiting a few Farm Watch communities around the country just to try and see what best practice is and the like. And it's really been very heartening, and I'm very, very grateful.
From farm safety to connectivity. South Africans need connection, and the government wants ownership. So where does Starlink fit in? Here's the Bloomberg report.
Loni, talk to us about what the holdup has been really behind Starlink not being able to operate here. It's been a very strong issue for Elon Musk in particular.
Yeah, so Elon is, of course, South African born. And the rules in South Africa currently says in the ICT sector that you have to sort of give away equity. So you have to give 30% of your company to black people. And Elon has refused to consider that option of giving away equity in his company. So South Africa has been working on a sort of workaround this black ownership option. There's something called equity equivalent. So you still invest in black businesses, but not giving away equity in your own company. But you invest in black businesses and infrastructure in the sector, in the country.
And this has been a big issue for many people who have been obviously living here and also following a lot of these laws for a while. How long do we think it's going to take to actually be resolved?
So the minister has proposed this sort of change in the rule. It's been met with a lot of sort of pushback from other lawmakers. So it will take a couple of months. Currently, they're in the process where they're going to take public sort of comments. That will take about 30 days. And then from there, at the fastest sort of pace, about 6 more months. But it has received some pushback from other lawmakers.
Do we think it's been used as a bargaining chip potentially when we talk about negotiations between Cyril Ramaphosa, the U.S. president, and also President Trump, who was up until last week close allies with Elon Musk?
Yes. So I don't know if that changes anything if they are not close allies anymore, but it was used as sort of like a bargaining chip. It didn't form part of their trade deal, but it was used as a bargaining chip that Elon could then, they would change the rules and Elon could start operating here. We will see if this is still so hot, definitely the workaround was proposed at that meeting in Washington.
I see. And Loni, can you put into context Starlink and its operations around the continent? Because again, Elon Musk has talked about how it's been growing across the continent, and the only place where he is born, he's not able to operate it here. Well, where else are we seeing operations across the continent and the region?
So it's about 18 countries currently, the biggest being Nigeria. Most recently, they started in Congo. Many of our neighboring countries have started, like Zimbabwe and Botswana. Yeah, so lots of those countries did actually also like ease their regulations around licensing for them to operate. So it's doing well. Africa has a bit of a connection problem. It's very expensive to roll out connectivity to rural areas. So if you can get it, it's often a cheaper option if you want to connect rural Africa. So so we are waiting to see how this plays out. Lots of people are hoping that it will come. Other people are like, no, we're not relaxing our rules for this.
At Sun Exchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
Following a meeting with award-winning Zimbabwean journalist Hopewell Chinono, BOSA's Ayanda Ali shared a stark warning with a glimmer of hope. Let's take a listen.
I think the sad and dark and depressing part of our conversation was when he spoke about the condition of Zimbabwe and how Zim didn't get the way it is today overnight. It was a slow and steady decline. It wasn't a big bang approach or like an asteroid hit the country and all of a sudden things fell apart. He said they slowly started to see decay in infrastructure. He looked me in the eye and he said, South Africa is where Zimbabwe was in around 2007. And the writing is on the wall. The signs are there. President Cyril Ramaphosa said in his capacity as ANC president while speaking at the January 8th statement that he knows for a fact that municipalities are struggling to provide clean drinking water to many a household and that sewage is seeping through the gardens of some communities. He mentioned that he knows that refuse is not being removed, electricity is not being supplied. They're well aware. Those are the signs. Red flag. But you know what inspired me about what he had to say? That indeed the power is in our hands to make a difference. We can and must change status quo. You and I can stop and say no. We the people can make a difference. We don't have to continue in this current trajectory. You and I, we can make a difference. Vote wisely.
Let's hope history does not repeat itself. A new financial scandal dubbed BHI 2.0 is unfolding in Johannesburg. Broker Mark Kretschmar has allegedly disappeared with over 30 million rand in a Ponzi-styled scheme. My colleague Kerry Lanigan put this report together.
A Johannesburg-based broker, Mark Kretschmar, is at the center of an unfolding financial scandal after allegedly disappearing with over 30 million rand of investors' money in what appears to be a Ponzi-style investment scheme. His clients, many of whom were close friends, family members, and single parents, are now left financially devastated and demanding answers. According to a report on the case by News 24, Kretschmar built a network of clients over several years, primarily through personal relationships and word-of-mouth referrals in Johannesburg's northern suburbs. Presenting himself as a savvy investor with access to offshore opportunities, he allegedly promised above-average returns while positioning himself as someone with integrity and experience. Concerns surfaced earlier this year when payments were delayed and communication became sporadic. Investors who attempted to withdraw funds were met with excuses, ranging from banking delays to offshore transfer issues. As suspicion grew, Kretschmar stopped responding and has since vanished, according to multiple complaints filed with the police. Reports suggest that more than 100 investors may have been affected, and the total loss is believed to exceed 30 million rand. Most victims reportedly never signed formal contracts or verified Kretschmar's financial credentials, trusting him due to long-standing personal ties. It has since emerged that Kretschmar was not registered with the Financial Sector Conduct Authority as a licensed financial service provider. The Gauteng Commercial Crimes Unit has opened an investigation and is currently tracing Kretschmar's movements. Authorities have appealed to other victims to provide documentation and account details to support the probe. The Kretschmar case has revived memories of the massive BHR Trust Ponzi scheme, which collapsed in 2023, affecting more than 1,800 investors and involving nearly 3 billion rand. That scheme, orchestrated by Craig Warriner and enabled by high-profile financial advisors, also thrived on trust, social networks, and the allure of consistent returns. While BHR operated on a larger scale, the fundamentals of deception and regulatory blind spots are similar to the Kretschmar case. Many of Kretschmar's clients are left financially crippled with slim prospects of recovering their funds. Legal experts say that most victims have limited recourse without formal investment contracts or regulatory protections. One investor summed up the collective frustration. We weren't just robbed of our money, we were robbed of our trust.
The one lesson I take from these stories is that there's no such thing as easy money. You can access the full report on BizNews Premium. Now, Tesla is set to launch its robo-taxi service in Austin, Texas tomorrow, but not everyone is convinced it will go smoothly, Bloomberg reports.
When it comes to a robo-taxi for Tesla, is that option, is that business model for growth not as available to them because of the brand damage you've been talking about?
I think it is. And I think one thing, you know, about the key person risk and Elon, you know, this double-edged sword. I remember, you know, during the Biden administration, you know, Elon gets on a plane and goes and meets with Xi, and just out of the blue. And, you know, he had, you know, his reach stretches very far. I think that, you know, there are difficulties in China about data. They have made progress there. Europe is a little more, the EU is a little more bureaucratic, I think, and more difficult, like a patchwork, to get approval there. In the U.S., one of the fundamental things that the relationship between the Trump administration and Musk had going for it is to try to have a blanket, federal rule about, advancing autonomy versus the patchwork, state way that we have it right now. So I think they'll be able to move, you know, outside of the United States in this. I think it takes time. You know, one of the advantages they have is they're going for this all visual, all camera approach versus, you know, much higher cost for a Waymo. A Waymo vehicle costs over $200,000. And so it's much more capital intensive. There's still a big debate whether, you know, Tesla's approach will work, in the long term. That remains to be seen.
I'm nervous about sitting in the backseat of a car with no driver in the front, but I suppose that's innovation. It's meant to make us feel uncomfortable in order for us to progress. Now, the first ball has been bowled in the 2025 World Test Championship final between South Africa and Australia. And the team at BizNews wishes the Proteas well as we try to break that elusive duck with regards to ICC competitions, as did the Springboks. Let's take a look.
In Tampa, and to the rest of the Proteas team, we want to say all the best for the final at Lords. We as the Springboks back you and the rest of the country. Let's go! Let's go!
And that's it for today's briefing. Thank you for watching and a big thanks to the BizNews team for putting together another fantastic production. Until next time, cheerio.
This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to finance solutions that enable real growth.